I know that what I covered in the first segment of today's lecture is a lot to absorb. It's a lot to take in because it's so strange to so many people. If you feel that way, welcome to the club. We all felt that way the first time we were ever introduced to this stuff, and it's not unusual. So let me just review a little bit. On the left side of the board, I said, are a list of fields of inquiry and theory making that have arisen over the last few thousand years. They've been distinguished, and some people have written about them and made theories to explain what goes on in them. Quantitative has to do with the quantity that we experience things to have, and we represent that by a number. So the science that studies the quantity of things is mathematics. Next is spatial. We notice that the things around us occupy space, have size, have location, and so on. And geometry studies shapes and locations and so on. There's a theory of motion, often included in physics, but sometimes made a distinct area of study. The physical has to do with physical characteristics of things. Things like weight, mass, density, specific gravity, whether something's a solid, a liquid, or a gas, and the physical laws that relate those characteristics. Then there are sensory characteristics that we see to things. The things have color, or they're smooth, or they're hot. Their sounds are loud and small, and soft, and tastes are sweet or bitter, and so on. Next, we have the aspect of logic. And this is not an aspect just of our own thinking. It's not that human thinking is governed by logical laws that we can't deny and get around, but things around us exhibit logical properties. They do so passively, but they still do that. A thing is conceivable logically. It's able to be distinguished by us from something else. That's passive, but it's still logical. Formative. I explained a little bit the viewing history as the transmission of culture-forming power, our ability to turn natural materials into an artifact, make something new. And the very next kind of discipline after that is linguistic, because one of the first things that humans did was take natural sounds or marks and turn them into a system of symbols so that we have language. That language is an artifact. There are social relations between people. Life just exhibits this stuff to us without us making it up. We have social relations with our parents, relations with our children, our neighbors, our fellow workers at work, and so on. And there are norms of politeness. One of the major properties or characteristics that's involved in social relations is respect. And there are many different ways of showing that. There are also ways of showing disrespect. That has to do with our social life. And then there's the economic side of life. We're not always buying and selling, but anything whatever is potentially economically valuable or not. So a diamond buried somewhere, and I don't know about it, is still subject to the laws of supply and demand and diminishing returns, even though I don't know it because I didn't dig the diamond up yet. If I do find it and I have it polished, somebody says, well, now it's worth so many dollars. There's also a law, a legal side to life, where we adjudicate what is fair and what's not. We look to government to make laws and to set up and enforce an order of public justice. So that has to do with finding some things to be just and others to be unjust. We also find that some things have aesthetic value. That, for example, they may be beautiful. And we also experience life as exhibiting that some things are just wrong to do and others are not. We find that. Does everybody agree entirely? No. But there are fundamental insights, ethical insights, that have been the same for every civilization we know about and wherever there are people. There have always been restrictions that say you can't kill another human being. There have always been rules about whom it is legitimate to have sex with. And there have a host of others that surround those and in addition to them. And people make theories about this stuff. What is it that makes something right or wrong? Then we look at that. What's the basis for this ethical understanding that we just naturally have in life? And finally, things are trustworthy or not. And the most trustworthy is the one we say we have faith in, and that's whatever we regard as the creator of everything else. That's religious trust. I hope that helps clarify some things a little more. Let's go back and talk for a minute about what Thales discovered when he started to make theories. I described his difference, his new idea of a theory, as picking out characteristics that the things actually have that you're trying to explain, and the laws that might be governing it. And that's an explanation rather than likening it to human strife or peace or love or whatever. Now, some of this won't sound very compelling. Let me explain it before you pass judgment on it. When Thales reflected on that, he wanted to know what it is that is in everything. What is the basic stuff everything is made of? So he assumed that at least things are made of matter. There's a stuff. What is the basic nature of that stuff? And the answer he proposed is water. Bertrand Russell once commented that if somebody introducing philosophy tells the class that it began when Thales said everything is made of water, he will have destroyed their respect for the course and he'll never recover. Well, I hope that's not true. Listen to his reasons, though. It's not a true hypothesis, but here are his reasons. He stands by the seashore, and he watches water vapor going up and forming clouds. So he postulated that clouds are made of water. The sea is made of water. The river that comes down and empties into the sea deposits earth at the delta. We already know that water can be hard as well as soft. If it gets cold enough, it turns to ice. Maybe there are other conditions under which it turns into earth. And it's the water that's depositing the earth. So that was the way he came to the proposal that water is the basic stuff of which everything is made. Not a right conclusion, but brilliantly observed and argued. He was no dummy. In fact, he established quite a reputation in the ancient world when he visited Egypt, and the Egyptians explained to him that their crops depend upon when the Nile overflows. Each spring, the Nile overflows, and we never know quite when that's going to be. And if we could predict when it was going to happen, we could know how to plan our go ahead and plant, and that the overflow would be coming. So Thales looked at the map and he thought about that and he said, oh, I can tell you. It has to do with the wind direction. When the wind is coming from the south, then the river flows the way it normally does. But when the wind shifts around in the spring and it comes from the north, it piles the water of the Nile back at the mouth, and so the river backs up and overflows its banks. So if you will hold your crops off till you see the wind shift, when the wind shifts, you can go plant them, and then you know that within a few days or whatever it was, the river will irrigate them. Well, the Egyptians went crazy. They thought, oh, this is freaking brilliant. They made parties for him. They proclaimed him the great wizard and so on. But that was a theory. He didn't try to explain why the Nile overflowed by talking about gods and goddesses in the river or river nymphs or that love and hate were in strife. He said he looked at the properties of the Nile and what could affect it and made his theory from that. That's what has held the field ever since. Theory making totally replaced myth making. We no longer explain things with myths, but by abstracting the characteristics of the things and looking at what laws apply and drawing our conclusion. Often in these different areas of study are called sciences. That's not the way we use the term in English, that's true, but in other languages, each of these is, for example, what the Germans call Wissenschaften, a branch of knowledge. And that's the way I'm going to use the term. We think of sciences as only the ones at the bottom of the list that do experiments. But in another sense, every one of these is a science. It's a field of study. And we're going to try to look at how people have made theories within these areas, and then we're going to look at a couple of ontologies to see how people did that, what they proposed. And then we want to, after we see in our next lecture, tomorrow's lecture, that there will be a definite relation of how people do that to what they believe is divine. That's the basis for saying there should be a Christian approach to all of this, and for saying then, therefore, there's a Christian philosophy possible. And then we will look at one that has actually been made. It was proposed by Professor Herman de Ewert of the Free University of Amsterdam. De Ewert died in 1977 and left a magnificent accomplishment in showing in great detail what an ontology could look like if it's controlled by belief in God. He'll be explaining the natures of things. And one of the things that de Ewert's going to tell us it was that Christians ought not to be looking for one fundamental overarching characteristic that explains the nature of the whole of creation. It's not true that the whole of creation is physical or it's all mathematical, that those are what produce everything else that's true about the creation. No, there are many different kinds of things in the world, and there's a way to get at the natures of those things and understand it more thoroughly that doesn't assume that any one of these is the nature of the divine, the nature of the Creator, what makes them all, why they are all exist. And that's how that is going to fall out. So I want to go now to something about the natures of things and show you what some of the puzzles are that arise and how it is then that different theories approach that as to outline a contrast for you. So after we talk about what religious belief is and how it can relate to this process of theory making, we'll have already seen a few theories, how they went. I already said something about Thales' theory. There are others. And we'll look at that stuff, and then we'll look at what de Ewert has pointed to as the way the Christian ought to be doing this stuff. So that's enough for now. You think about this, rewind the tape, and look at it again. Take your notes. I wish I could hear your questions.